Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
On Friday, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a tentative eviction moratorium deal between lawmakers and advocacy groups for landlords and tenants. The deal comes as the state legislature prepares to wrap up its session today. Landlords are praising the agreement as a sensible approach that isn't a giveaway to renters. But tenant groups have criticized the bill, saying it leaves too many Californians vulnerable to eviction. We'll get the details on Assembly Bill 3080. And joining us now to give us those details is KQED reporter Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. Hi, Joe. Thanks for talking to us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So spell it out for us. What does this agreement do in broad strokes? I know everyone had to give up something here.
Yeah, there are a few folks who are entirely happy with this. And I got to say, before I explain it, one of the biggest critiques of it is that it is so complicated that it needs explanation. So as I work out and tell you all the parts of this, it's good to keep in mind that the very idea of how complicated it is something that some critics are saying will turn people off from even using it. So, you know, the main provisions of how renters are protected with this, right, is that if you have missed any rent between the beginning of the pandemic shutdowns in March and August 31st, that missed rent will be converted to civil debt. And so you won't be able to be evicted by it. And a landlord can seek that debt in small claims court. So you still got to pay it back, but you can't be evicted because of it. But then that's when things get a little murky, because after August 31st, when September 1st hits, between September 1st and January 31st, that you have to pay 25% of your rent. Now, once you pay that 25%, anything after that, the remaining 75% can be converted to civil debt. And all the stuff I just said about the previous period applies. Landlords can seek it in a small claims court. They can't evict you for not paying it. But you got to pay that 25% and by that the end of that time period. So those are two of the major tenant protections in there. And then when you file is once a landlord posts a 15-day notice, what used to be a 3-day notice, to say, hey, we're going to start this whole court process to evict you. That's when you have to say, under penalty of perjury, I have a COVID or pandemic-related financial hardship. And that's another part that folks were kind of disappointed by. They didn't want necessarily people to have to say this under penalty of perjury, thinking that might scare off people from using the provision. And then we also lost, at one point in time, the bill had a provision around protecting property owners, folks who own their own homes, or also landlords, small-time landlords with 4 units or less, helping them get a mortgage forbearance. And that forbearance is no longer in the bill, in what people will be want lawmakers will be voting on today.
So how many people, in broad strokes, would this help, or could this help, if everyone who qualified went through with the process?
Well, that's a tricky question. And I've been asking this question. And what lawmakers have been telling me is, and folks involved in these negotiations are saying is, well, we don't know exactly. We know that millions of people are facing financial uncertainty right now. Millions have filed for unemployment assistance, and a number of surveys have hinted at how many people across California, really a truly staggering amount, are worried about their homes. But we don't know, with all the concessions, how many people this will help. We don't know how many more people would have been helped if the bill was more robust in the way that all the tenants' advocates who wanted it to be. The number of people less who may be helped in the compromise bill is something that folks just can't say. We just don't know.
And the bill, if I'm not mistaken, right, does make a distinction between people who are eligible for help in regards to their income. Is that right? Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this was also a sticking point that had people a bit worried. But you know, the folks in the landlord side of discussions were real worried. They were talking for a long time. You heard in these in discussions in public meetings, I'm talking about tenants with Teslas who had, you know, who were tech workers who had come in with all sorts of money, and then stiff landlords on much needed rent. That was an argument we heard a lot. So what there is now is a kind of if you make over 130% of the area median income of your county or over, so if you're making a little bit of money, a landlord can, when you say, oh, I have a COVID impact to my finances, a landlord can say, well, hey, turn up a document to prove it, please. And then you have to furnish some proof, whether it's a layoff notice or a notice of reduction in wages, and you have to provide that proof if you're at 130% AMI or over.
We'd like to invite our listeners to call in and give us your experiences. What are you hoping to get out of this bill? Are you hoping for some financial relief? How has coronavirus and the financial crisis affected your housing situation? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org or post them at kqed.org/forum. So, Joe, as we're talking about this, I think it's important to keep in mind that the vote for this bill hasn't happened yet. It's going to happen later this afternoon because of the 72-hour rule in the legislature, meaning bills have to be in print for 72 hours before the legislature can take action on them. And this bill needs a two-thirds majority because it's an urgency measure, so meaning it would take effect right away. So tell me, what are you expecting? Is that vote going to be easy? Is it going to be hard to come by all the votes they need?
Yeah, I'm told there are a few holdouts. There are a few, and these are Democrats, mind you, that there are a few holdouts who are waiting for, you know, more to confer more with allies in the realtor industry, more time to kind of assess things. Yeah, this, like you said, this is a really high burden, and this isn't going to be easy.
Right. And I think, though, you have to give credence to the fact that because Governor Newsom has signed on, that does give some lawmakers, you know, some cover to vote for things, that being assured that, you know, they're not going to go to bat for this bill only to have it be rejected by the governor. So that, well, I think, will give some people protection.
Well, right. And you can already see this in the way that they're framing it, the way that they're discussing it. I mean, right out of the gate, when they started getting all sorts of heat from different tenants groups, lots of folks have been saying, well, hey, this is just something that's going to get us over the hump until next session, next year, when the lawmakers, you know, come back into the Capitol and they're talking again about new provisions. This law, if it's approved, is set to, you know, sunset on February 1st. So, you know, that's, you know, they're hoping to jumpstart a new discussion before then. And, you know, Assemblymember David Chu, who is, you know, who is one of the key negotiators and key authors in this, has even said, you know, if you're not happy with this bill, come out between now and February 1st, because this is how we're going to be able to really build momentum to get a stronger bill. He says this is if folks make their voices heard between now and February 1st, and that goes for the other side too. If there are landlords who are feeling that they're not represented, that this bill is hurting them, it's between now and February 1st is the time to make your voice heard.
Right. And I think that's something to keep in mind that you just brought up, that there is an aspect that landlords are concerned as well, because, of course, many of them use the rent that they receive from their tenants to pay the mortgage on their properties. So is there any protection for landlords in there who might be afraid that they won't be able to pay those mortgages?
Yeah, you know, this is the interesting part of this. It's almost like, you know, in the ocean when the bigger fish, you know, eat the smaller fish, and a yet bigger fish eats that yet bigger fish. The landlord lobby, landlord lobby, really pushed back on some of the tighter elements of this bill that would have helped tenants. But the banking industry pushed back on a lot of the elements that would have helped property owners and landlords. So the banking industry really didn't want to see a mortgage forbearance. They were really arguing hard that this would hit their bottom line in a big way and have a cascading economic effect. And in negotiations, that was the forbearance was one element that was lost. There is an expansion of a homeowner bill of rights to cover new classes of property owners, but I'm not hearing a lot of people crowing about how great that is. This is not necessarily an element of the bill that people are excited about. It doesn't sound like it's going to do a lot.
We're talking about evictions with Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. He's a reporter and producer for KQED News. What questions do you have about the eviction crisis in California and how the legislature is addressing it? You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Phil in San Pablo, tell us what you think.
Hi there. Well, I'm just sort of blown away at how this can go on as long as it's gone on. Because my problem is, during the pandemic, my landlord has raised my rent by $400. That's just, within the past couple of months. And I've been waiting for my unemployment since March. And I live in a single family home, so I'm not exempt from rent increases. So having this moratorium on evictions is really important to me. And this, I'm frustrated because I've gone through my state senator, my assemblyman, and I'm getting no relief. They just keep saying, hang in there and wait, and we'll get back to you. I haven't heard from anybody.
Well, joining us now is Christina Livingston. She's the statewide executive director for the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. Christina, talk to us a little bit about that. Your group has been representing tenants, and what are some of the concerns that you're hearing?
First, thanks for having me. We organize, low-income community members and Black and Latinx community members across the state. And, at a basic level, folks who right now do not receive income because they lost their job or because they weren't eligible for unemployment, they are really right now struggling just to figure out how to feed themselves, much less pay the rent. And there is a pandemic obviously raging outside of everyone's doors. And so the notion that anyone could be evicted at this moment does mean that many people will fall into the streets and will become more susceptible to COVID. People are really scared for their lives in this moment.
Your group has said that the governor turned his back on renters with this bill. Why do you think that? And if you think that, why did you guys eventually sign on to a compromise?
Well, I want to say we did not sign on to a compromise. We took no part in those negotiations, and we opposed that compromise. We do believe that he's turned his back on renters. The only reason that renters were not allowed to be evicted was because the courts stepped up and said that they will not be filing evictions. They will not allow them to go through. The governor from the beginning passed the responsibility on to cities, some of which would do something and some of which would not, leaving millions of tenants vulnerable. And with this bill, he's only saying that for some period of time, some people cannot be evicted for non-payment of rent. But that leaves every other kind of eviction on the table. And there are several unscrupulous landlords who have been harassing tenants during this pandemic who would happily find some other way, some other reason to move forward with an eviction and push people into the streets. And so for us, the bottom line is, while we are being told to shelter, he should require every person to have the opportunity to stay in their homes by canceling evictions right now.
And are you concerned about the requirement in this legislation that would require renters to state under penalty of perjury that they've been affected by COVID? We've heard some people say, for instance, those in the undocumented community might not be willing to take that step.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, every requirement that gets put into place that makes it harder for some segment of people actually micro-targets those who are most vulnerable in our communities. The undocumented, you know, folks who work in labor that's under the table for various reasons. You know, people who receive income in that way might be, you know, folks who have some difficulties with the law. Anybody who would see under penalty of perjury and think this could turn out bad for me in the future and therefore would sort of self-select an eviction, that's a micro-target. And it's actually sort of throwing away the most vulnerable people in our community.
Let's go to Steve in Santa Rosa. Steve, you're on forum.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I might have missed this because, you know, I had to turn the radio off. But the question is, what happens after September 1st if you are caught up in your rent? And then as the economy worsens, which it most certainly will, you know, you can't pay, you know, maybe in October or even in September. What happens then? It, you know, is this does this bill, you know, sort of still, you know, include a moratorium for people that are caught up on their rent currently, and then they start to fall behind, and then are they going to get threatened? I mean, to me, this seems insane, because if you're going to kick people out in the middle of an epidemic, all that's going to happen is that it's going to increase the contagion, and that's my comment. I'll take my answer off the phone here, okay?
Sure. Christina Livingston, do you want to reply to that?
Sure. I just want to say there's no moratorium no matter what. You do have to, if you start to fall behind, everyone is required to pay at least 25% of their rent during that time period between September 1st and January 31st by the end of it. And if not, you will receive at least a 15-day pay or quit, which you can answer to. So unfortunately, there's no moratorium. And the real kicker for me was that this bill actually exempts any city or county from passing anything stronger about non-payment of rent. And if you currently live in a city that has a moratorium and it expires, they cannot renew that moratorium until February 1st.
And Christina, this legislation doesn't do much for homeowners. It mostly focuses on renters. What are your feelings about that?
You know, it is our belief that everybody right now needs to figure out how we can get through this and get through it alive and healthy. So we really believe that we need protections for tenants and protections for homeowners and small landlords who really need it. There are lots of, you know, big corporations and billionaires who are doing fantastically right now. They are making lots of money right now. And we believe that the reality is the governor should be figuring out how to tax billionaires and people who are doing really well in order to help bail out landlords in need and to cancel rent for tenants.
Well, Christina Livingston, Statewide Executive Director for the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, thank you so much for speaking to us. We really appreciate it. We're talking about evictions and the state's new proposed legislation on a COVID-19 eviction moratorium deal. We're speaking with Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, a reporter and producer for KQED News. Please stick with us. We'll be back right after a short break. Welcome back to Forum. We're talking with KQED reporter Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez about a last-minute deal in the California legislature to avert an eviction crisis. And we want to hear from you. How has coronavirus and the financial crisis affected your housing situation? Give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email your questions to forum@kqed.org. We're also joined now by Joshua Howard. He's Executive Vice President of the local Government Affairs for the California Apartment Association, a trade group representing rental owners. Joshua, thank you for speaking with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So tell me, what do you think that the Apartment Association and the owners, the landlords you represent, take away from this deal?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that everyone has been impacted by COVID-19. And early on, the rental housing industry was called upon by CAA to really hold rent increases, to not move forward with evictions unless there was a true safety concern to the community. And as the pandemic waged on, what we saw was that there were thousands of residents who were unable to pay their rent because they lost income. They had to stay home to care for a sick loved one or care for their children who were being homeschooled. We urged our members to act with compassion, to work with those individuals. And now that the economy is slowly beginning to reopen, rent is becoming due. And what's important also to note is that the courts are going to be reopening in the next day or so. When the courts open right now, there are no parameters for how we move forward to protect those renters who are financially impacted by COVID-19, or to protect rental housing providers from to recover the income they've lost, or to evict problem tenants. So what AB 3088 does is it gives guidance to the courts, it gives guidance to renters, and it gives guidance to rental housing providers as we move forward.
We have a comment here. Travis, who is a small landlord, writes, I'm retired and own a single family home that I rent out to supplement Social Security. My tenant stopped paying rent several months ago without reason. My mortgage company only allows me to only skip a total of 2 mortgage payments. From a small landlord's perspective, the current arrangement is extremely challenging financially. And Joshua, is that something you're hearing from a lot of landlords?
Well, I think it's important to recognize what AB 3088 does. AB 3088 requires those residents who have not paid rent from March through August to certify that they were financially impacted by COVID-19. If they were financially impacted by COVID-19 and can certify it, then they'd be protected from eviction. If they cannot certify it and they've been taking advantage of this situation, unfortunately, then it creates a process for the owner to recover the unit or recover the income that they've lost. So under 3088, Travis would be able to ask the tenant to certify that they have been affected by COVID-19 and then be able to either recover the income, recover the unit, or work out a payment arrangement with the resident.
We have another question. Betty writes, can anything be done to mandate that banks be required to wait for mortgage payments from landlords? That way, renters can stay in their home and landlords are covered. Joshua, was there any kind of a discussion about trying to set up an arrangement like that?
Well, I think it's important to note that the banks are regulated by the federal government, and that's why it's important for Congress to really step up and take ownership of this situation by looking at financial arrangements with the banks. But also what's really important here is that we need federal and state dollars to help renters come current on their back rent, but also to help rental housing providers stay current on their own financial obligations, their mortgage, their property taxes, their maintenance, and their own payroll. So what we need to start focusing on is how we can get dollars available either through rent vouchers or through mortgage relief to the owners so that they can continue to stay current on those obligations. And that's what's important to focus on, is the need for those rent relief and mortgage relief dollars so that payments can stay current, payroll can be made, maintenance can be taken care of.
And several lawmakers have already said that this is just a first step, this piece of legislation, should it pass, and that they're looking to do something similar, perhaps on a broader scope next year when they're not facing such a tight deadline like they were this year. Are you anticipating that? What do you hope comes from that discussion?
I think it's been well documented that this law, if it passes tonight and is signed by the governor, is intended to address the issue of the courts reopening this week while allowing everyone time to really focus on a comprehensive, more robust solution that can look at providing rent relief, look at providing forbearance, look at providing additional protections to both owners and their residents. And the association is committed to working with the legislature and the various stakeholders on finding a true, a comprehensive, long-term solution.
I do wonder, this bill would make it possible for landlords to pursue missed rent in a civil court, perhaps, like, for instance, going to small claims court to get some of that past rent. How likely do you think that is? I mean, would landlords want to take the trouble to pursue that money? And would the tenants who were not able to make the payments in the first place even be able to give that money back to the landlords?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that AB 3088 will provide eviction protection for those renters who were financially affected by COVID to not live under the fear of eviction if they can't pay their back rent. For the owner to pursue it, yes, they will have to potentially go to small claims court or work out a payment arrangement with the resident, but that's a business decision that each owner will have to make for their own circumstances. However, what this does do is it does protect those residents who, as I said, were financially affected by COVID, that they can continue to live in their homes, they can continue not to have to worry about paying the back rent immediately, and work either with the landlord or, if they do go to small claims court, work on an arrangement, hopefully there, where they can come current over time.
Let's go to Lupe in San Jose. Lupe, you're on forum.
Hi, good morning. I love your show. You guys are great. I just want to say that as a small businesswoman, Latina, minority, retired, you know, I work with my tenants all the time, even before coronavirus. It was a matter of a relationship. And we don't need the government to come and tell us what to do, because as human beings, we need to relate to each other and communicate with each other and work together. I've not evicted anyone for not lack of payment. I work with them, and if they can't pay, then I say, you know, you can't pay, let's just keep working together. And that's the thing. People just aren't human anymore. It's like, why does the government have to overreach and tell us what to do as small business people? Why can't we just all be human and understanding and know we're in a pandemic? Let's work together.
Thanks, Lupe. And let's go to Kevin in Martinez.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about banks. You know, we gave them a big bailout back in 2008 and gave them free, and right now giving them free money with no interest rate, no mortgage on the money that they lend to us. Now, we want to protect the renters and keep them from getting evicted. But what's to protect the property owner that pays $5,000 to $10,000 a year in taxes and another $2,000 a month in mortgage? So if you protect the renters from paying the rent, then there's no way to pay the taxes, no way to pay the mortgage. Essentially, the homeowner gets evicted while the banks reap a profit on 0% interest.
Well, Joshua, it seems to be a common theme that we're hearing here is that this is a cycle, right? Everyone is affected. It's not just potential tenants being evicted. It's landlords not being able to potentially pay their rent, which brings it back again to what you were saying about the need for federal help.
You know, I think Kevin really hit the nail on the head, and that is we need additional protections and financial protections, as I mentioned earlier. Without income to the property owner, then they can't pay their mortgage, they can't pay their taxes, they can't invest in the maintenance and upkeep of the building. And what happens with that ultimately is they fall behind and lose their own investment, their retirement savings, to foreclosure. When that happens, the owner loses the asset, but also the renters often lose their homes when the banks repossess the building. So it's really important to focus on the next step here, which is getting desperately needed funding in this space. Funding, as I mentioned, for renters, funding to rental housing providers to make them whole so they can make those financial obligations and don't run the risk that Kevin talked about, which is a very real concern of many small rental housing providers. Let's face it, over 90% of California's rental housing stock is owned by independent rental housing owners. These are people who have full-time jobs elsewhere, and they've invested what little extra money they had into rental housing to service their 401k, to service their kids' college savings account. And in this situation, they're falling behind, and it's going to jeopardize their ability to retire or send their kids to school or even provide their own livelihood. So we really need to look at finding additional funding so that we don't see this ripple effect that Kevin talked about.
Joshua Howard, Executive Vice President for Local Government Affairs for the California Apartment Association, thanks so much for joining us on Forum.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon or a great morning.
So, Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez, I want to get back to you. What is your takeaway from these conversations? Again, hearing from landlords saying that I need this rent to help me pay my mortgage, but, you know, renters saying, you know, if I have to pay this money, I'm going to be evicted and out on the street. It seems, again, once again, that it's all connected.
Yeah, I think it's it's really easy to get lost in the weeds of all the elements of these deals. But what I think is, at the end of the day, some of the starkest numbers I've heard is estimates of homelessness. You know, in Santa Clara County, for instance, there was a report that showed that, you know, homelessness might increase by more than 200% if eviction moratorium deals aren't reached. And if you can think of how that expands throughout the state, and how many more people might be on the streets throughout the state with just using that lens, it's pretty scary. It's really scary.
Right. And especially when you're talking about where would those people go, as we've mentioned earlier, going into, for instance, a homeless shelter or living with family and in situations where we know that COVID and coronavirus is more likely to spread because of the close gathering of people.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, it's one thing that we've only touched on lightly, but I really think we need to kind of emphasize is that this doesn't hit everyone equally. A pulse survey from the Census Bureau, you know, was asking about housing stability. And in July, 43% of Latino renters and 41% of Black renters in California said they had no or slight confidence they could pay their rent in next month, and that's this month, August. And when it comes to white renters, 25% of white renters said the same, and 33% of Asian renters. So there's definitely a disproportionate impact on Black and Latinx renters in California.
Which is also similar to what we're seeing with the coronavirus and different populations being hit disproportionately hard with the COVID-19 outbreak. I do have a question for you, Joe. Do you know how commercial rent would be affected? Is this just related to residential rentals?
Yeah, I or are there commercials? As I understand it, this is just residential rent, yes.
Okay. Let's see. How are any evictions legal when landlords are essentially putting the burden for property owners over extension of credit and debt onto the tenant? That's a listener comment, basically making the point that it sounds like they are saying you should not own a rental property if you're not prepared to pay for it without the rent.
Sure. Well, what I think it is important to note in terms of what evictions we're talking about evictions for non-payment of rent specifically. And that also extends to the moratoriums that are affected. You know, we didn't talk too much about this earlier, but what I think is really key to understand is that the local eviction moratorium moratoriums can't go forward in regards only to non-payment of rent. So, you know, for instance, if a county has one that is rolling, a lot of counties have been doing this on a rolling basis. June ends and they're like, okay, we're going to extend it through July. July ends, okay, we're going to extend it through August. But now you can't extend it anymore. So only the counties who have eviction protections that extend throughout the state of emergency. Solano County passed such a provision, and so did Sonoma County. But not every county has. Only those counties will see their own specific local eviction protections extend under this bill. Everyone else, that's it.
Right. And, you know, are we seeing concern? We've heard about this a little bit. What is the concern that, yes, you can get relief for a COVID related eviction, but you can't necessarily, you can still be evicted for other things?
Oh,
and is there
concern?
That's a really good point.
And that's a really sticky point that you only really know if you watch evictions a lot and you do a lot of, you spent a lot of time working with people who go through these evictions. And the big concern from, I would say, tenants advocates and from a tenant's perspective is that when you are protected from non-payment of rent, sometimes a landlord will try to find other things that, you know, you might be doing. I'm thinking of San Francisco's Chinatown, for instance, when one corporate landlord targeted an entire building of Chinese tenants because they were hanging laundry outside their windows. And they're like, oh, you broke your lease, I'm going to evict you. And, you know, that's something they've been doing in Chinatown for 100 years and definitely did not break the lease. And at that time, then Mayor Ed Lee had to like personally intervene to stop the evictions and push back. It's that kind of thing, the kind of thing where a landlord may try to find a different reason to evict you for the reason of your non-payment, but they may try some other method to see you out of the unit. That's the concern.
Let's quickly go to John in San Francisco. John, you're on forum.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that if tenants are going to have the burden of proving they can't pay rent, I think it's only fair that landlords should also have the burden of proving that they can't afford not to have the rent, because there are plenty of small building owners in San Francisco that are pretty flush because of the past years of increased rents and are not having any trouble making their mortgages or have owned the building for a long time. So I just think the burden should go both ways.
Thanks so much, John. And we've been talking with KQED reporter Joe Fitzgerald Rodriguez. Earlier, we spoke with Joshua Howard, Executive Vice President of Local Government Affairs for the California Apartment Association, a trade group representing rental owners. And we also spoke with Christina Livingston, Statewide Executive Director of the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauenberg, Ariana Prayley, and Blanca Torres. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our intern is Jameson Weiss. Our executive editor is Ethan Tovin-Lindsay. And our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Thanks so much. I'm Katie Orr, in for Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.